Hello and welcome to the Success Showcase. I'm your host, Eric Lopkin from the Modern Observer Group. And with me, as always, is Chip Januszewski from the Happiness and Success GPS. Chip, how are you doing this week?
Doing great. How about you, Eric?
Doing fantastic. Summer's in full bore, and we've just had another heat wave here in the Northeast. But today it's nice and cool, a little drizzle.
Mother Nature's taking care of everything, so we don't have to water the grass.
That's it. So today, we're going to be talking about the book, and to a lesser extent also the TED Talk, Start With Why. Now, if you haven't heard the TED Talk by Simon Sinek, I absolutely recommend going to TED.com and listening to his talk. Because it's inspirational, it's absolutely fantastic, and it turns the way you do business on its head. And it really shows you how to look at something in a completely different perspective, which is starting with why. Most people, they start with what, sometimes they'll start with how, but why is at the core, and that's what Simon talks about in both the TED Talk and the book that the talk is based on.
Yeah, he's talking about the golden circle, with why being in the middle, driving the how and the what. And it's just a fantastic way to look at things, and it's the proper way to look at things. It's an alternative perspective, and the bottom line is that if you can start with why, and you look at all the successful companies out there that just have cult-like followings like Apple and Southwest Airlines and things like that, it's because they started with a principle rather than what they're doing. They started with a cause.
Right. And for those of our listeners that might not be familiar with the concept of the golden circle, the golden circle is actually a proportion. It's used in art. It's used in photography. And following the composition of the golden circle leads you to a better aesthetic in your photography and artwork. What Simon does is he applies this and applies the proportions to how you do business. And it's a fantastic way of looking at it. As Chip just said, companies that have cult followings like Apple and Southwest, they start with why. And this golden circle describes how they do business. One of the examples in the book is that if Apple did business as a traditional tech company, their basic pitch would be, well, our computers are easier to use. You know, they're designed better, take a look. And that's pretty much it, because they would be the same as every other tech company, just focusing on what their unique selling proposition is. But Apple doesn't do that. All of their ads, everything that Steve Jobs did at the company, and everything Tim Cook has picked up from Steve Jobs, is all about why they're doing it. It's about projecting a lifestyle of the person that uses an Apple. It's about what they can accomplish when using Macs, iPhones, iPads, etc. And it goes to the point that most people never see a lot of the things they do. An example that I always loved is when the first Macs rolled off the assembly line. On the interior of the case, the team that built it signed the Macs. Now, nobody saw this. It was on the interior under a circuit board. You know, nobody was going to take a look at this. But it was there because everybody that was part of the original Mac team felt left a part of them in the computer. And it was part of what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the why permeates through your employees and so on. We're going to get more into detail in that. But Apple, as far as starting with their why, right out of the book, it says, everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. And the way they challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. And then it just says, and we just happen to make great computers.
Right.
The traditional thing is we have quality service, great products, and so on and so forth. Want to buy one? And that's really the difference between the why and the strategy where you're just going out there and making a pitch to start getting market share and so on and so forth. And that's the big difference between having customers versus one-time sales.
Right. I think we've talked about this in the past where a one-time sale is fine. It's one, it's done, over. But you want your customers to come back to you. You want people to have a feeling when they deal with you. So one of the things the book talks about is that there are only really two ways to influence behavior. It's manipulation and inspiration. Inspiration starts with why. It's why you're doing it. Manipulation is what most businesses fall back on. And when he talks about manipulation, he's not talking about being devious and all of that. He's talking about different ways of selling, like price. When you lower the price, people come to buy. However, people who buy on a low price are generally not loyal buyers. You know, if somebody else lowers their price, they'll go to them. He talks about manipulating through fear. And one of the things he talks about is an old saying in corporate America, nobody ever lost their job by hiring IBM. And that was back in the 60s and 70s. IBM was the safe choice. You knew you might not be getting anything terribly innovative, but nothing was going to go wrong. It was going to be a safe choice to choose IBM as a vendor. And IBM capitalized on that by suggesting that, well, you know, if something goes wrong with another vendor, you could be fired. So they would manipulate potential customers through fear. He also talks about using novelty. We've all seen articles and talked about shiny object syndrome and grabbing after the next shiny object. Well, companies use that to manipulate. If they can show you the next big thing, doesn't matter how long it lasts, they grab you through that attention. Smartphone sales are the perfect example of this. Samsung generally comes out with a new phone a few months before Apple is expected to unveil the new iPhone. And they make all sorts of claims, the next big thing, this is what, you know, our next feature, and they compare it to the iPhone that came out a year before, so it makes it look even better. And then, you know, either it sells or it doesn't. But by comparison, you never see lines around the block for the new Samsung phone. You do when the iPhone goes on sale. Because Apple hasn't used these manipulations, they started with why, and they inspire their customers.
Yeah, they have that cult following because of the way they do things. And, you know, manipulative advertising is the norm for advertising. And as you say, I mean, it does get a whole lot of sales and so on and so forth. But as far as loyal customers, unless you don't have a brain or so on and so forth, you're not likely to want to, completely go back time and time again just based upon those things, you know, the manipulative ads and so on and so forth. Whereas, you know, every time Apple comes up with a new phone and so on and so forth, as you said, the lines are out the door and it has nothing to do with price or anything else. You know that it's a decent quality product. Is it as good or better than a Samsung? Some people say yes, some people say no, but they're always there because of Apple's Y.
Exactly. And, you know, your why defines everything you do. It's what sets you apart from your competitors. You know, why are you doing this? The what is easy. Almost anybody can do the same what. Again, Apple produces phones and computers. Dell produces computers. For a while, I think they were trying to do a phone as well. Amazon produced a phone. And I think Amazon is a great example because they put together their Fire Phone and there was no why. It was their why was, well, we want to get more customers. And it showed. Just before they discontinued it, you could buy a Fire Phone for $1.99 because nobody wanted it. Because nobody had this feeling, oh, well, what can I accomplish with it? No, it was just one more piece of merchandise that Amazon sold.
Yeah, and Apple, they're not credited with inventing the MP3 player and so on and so forth, but as far as looking, challenging the status quo, they're the ones that came up with the slogan, 1,000 songs in your pocket. And they came up with the iPod, which was brand new technology. Is it the best? No, but that was innovative. And the bottom line is when you are working from a why, you actually can get into different markets that you weren't originally in, like Apple did with that, as opposed to having the companies that you were talking about trying to branch out into different product lines when all they're doing is going after it for profit.
All right. The iPod was not the first MP3 player. It certainly wasn't the last MP3 player. But it followed Apple's why. It was simple to use. It was the first MP3 player that it was easy to get your music onto. And then when they unveiled the iTunes Store, which made it easy to buy the digital music and just put it right on, that's where it really took off.
That transformed the industry.
Yeah.
And were they the first? No. But they came at it from their why.
That's it. People talk a lot about first mover advantage. But in actuality, the first mover advantage is highly, highly overvalued. And if you don't believe me, ask Alta Vista, who beat Google to the punch in search engines. Ask Yahoo, who beat Google to the punch in search engines.
I had totally forgot about Alta Vista.
Yeah, you know, it's...
There's a blast from the past.
Yes.
But what Apple comes across, I mean, when you have a why, you have authenticity. And, you know, we've talked about networking and relationships being based upon trust. And it's the same thing with developing a cult in that way, because the bottom line is people trust Apple because they are authentic and they're working for a why perspective from a core instead of just pushing products out there. And that's something that you gain just by being authentic. That's how you get the loyalty.
Right. Another company that they talk about in the book is Southwest Airlines. Now, Southwest was not the first low-cost airline. Many people don't feel they're the best, but they have a cult following. And one of the things that they talk about in the book is the fact that after the airline industry took a downturn after 9/11, loyal Southwest customers sent Southwest money to try to help them get through the downturn. Now, the amount of money wasn't enough to even make a blip on the balance sheet, but the thought that a customer out of the goodness of their heart, wanted to help a company survive. You don't get that from a lot of companies.
Unheard of. It really is.
Right.
And they've been, I mean, they came out in the 70s. Back then, a little bit of history behind the Southwest Airlines, which is in the book, is in the early 70s, only 15% of the traveling population were traveling by air. And all Southwest cared about was the other 85%. And they came up with the slogan that we're the champion for the common man. And that's why they started the airline. And because things were expensive, their champion for the common man, they had to be cheap, fun, and simple. And that's how they did it. And you remember their slogan, people still remember today, you are now free to move across the country.
Right.
In all of their advertising. And that's not a sale. That was their cause. And that cause, as you said, after 9/11, that was still there. And everybody knew that. And the bottom line is, of all the airlines out there, if you asked anybody on the street who has the best reputation, I'm sure about 99% of the people would say Southwest.
Exactly. When they stepped into the industry, they were a disruptor because air travel was very expensive. I remember on the show Mad Men, there was a line where they were talking about air travel, and they said, air travel is way too expensive to waste on your wife. But that was how air travel was perceived. It was very expensive. You dressed up to go on a plane.
Absolutely. You know,
very different from the way it is now. And Southwest is responsible for a large chunk of that. Because their mission, their why, was to bring air travel to the common man. And that, you know, that's a very different why than an airline who's focusing on first class travel, who's focusing on international travel. And this gave them that cult following because people felt this was a company that was in their corner. They were doing this for them.
Yeah, I mean, nothing like reaching out to the common man. It's such a simple slogan, but champion for the common man, that is so powerful.
Right.
So, everybody wants to feel common.
Actually, I don't think it's everybody wants to feel common. I think everybody does feel common. And they look for things that make them feel uncommon, that make them feel elevated, that inspire them. And that's what both Apple and Southwest managed to do as companies.
Yeah, and if you look at their employees too, I mean, talking about leadership and so on, all good companies like Apple and Southwest started with a vision from the founders. And people, companies like Starbucks and so on and so forth, same thing. And what happens is when you permeate that through your employees, they're going to work for a cause because it's coming from their heart and it's coming from their why, as opposed to just going to collect the paycheck. And that's one of the huge differences. The bottom line is working for companies like that, it's not really a job. It's more of a mission that you're on. And there are some companies that have done well because they started out with that and then they had kind of like a disconnect when their owners died or left. I mean, Walmart's a great example of that. Starbucks went through that too. And so it's a culture not only for consumers, but also for employees and the whole way things are done inside.
Right. And Starbucks is an excellent example of this because Starbucks actually didn't start with why. And the company bore no resemblance to the company that we all know as Starbucks today. Starbucks started out selling coffee makers. They didn't make coffee. They just sold you the parts to do it yourself. When Howard Schultz came in, he transformed that company partially based on his experiences over in Italy with Cafe Society and all of the espresso houses, and partially because he figured out what the why was. And in fact, his own book is called It's Not About the Coffee. Because the coffee for Starbucks was just a means to get people into the store, to get people talking, to build communities. And that's what Starbucks' why was. Now, Howard Schultz left the company, and it fell by the wayside, and they had to bring him back. So it's a great example of what happens when you don't have a why. And you see, with Starbucks, one company that fluctuated back and forth, and when they had their why, when they focused on their why, they were very successful. And when they didn't have their why, they weren't.
Yeah, that's why it's so important for the company management inside and so on. Because as the companies get bigger, sometimes the owner is a little bit more distant away, the person who founded it. And it's so important to keep that why and that vision with everybody in the company at all times. Otherwise, you are going to subject to yourself to swaying and disconnecting and so on and so forth. So it's so important to keep that vision going.
Right. And something that they talk about a lot in the book is that if you understand your why, that tells you how. The why is what tells you how you're going to do business, how you go about it, and how important it is that people understand your why. And they give an example of a shopping cart. If you see somebody's shopping cart, and the shopping cart has milk, rice, celery, carrots, assorted vegetables, you know this person is shopping because they are trying to be on a healthy diet. Now, it's very easy for that message to get muddled. If you've got the same shopping cart, but you throw a package of M&Ms in there and a box of cookies, now the message isn't as clear. So you don't know necessarily what the why is there. So the why has to come through. And the why helps you figure out what you're doing and how you're doing it. Because if Apple had just said, we're going to build computers, that was it. They could go up there, and they would basically be the same as so many other companies that build computers. I mean, now you have Dell, Asus, Gateway, Lenovo. There's tons of them. Going back then, you had Texas Instruments. You had Radio Shack. Even Timex got into the computer business. And none of them lasted in the computer business because it wasn't a focus of their why. It was just something, another trend they were trying to jump on. For Apple, the computer was a way to change the world. It was a way to give the power of huge corporations to individuals. That was the why that Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs started out with. And that brought them where they were. That took them to the point where it showed everything had to be simple because they wanted individuals to be able to use it. Remember, when Apple started, most computers were incredibly complicated to use. You didn't have, you know, a mouse and a desktop the way we do now. Everything was command lines and cryptic commands. If you were lucky enough to be using a computer that did that, prior to that, it was punch cards and punch tape. And it was only a specialized group of people who could use these. And Apple's why was to bring the power of computers to the common man, the same way Southwest wanted to bring flight to the common man.
Yep, they used their innovation to do that and figured out an easier way to bring it to the masses, just like you're saying. Because you and I both remember the days when computers were a whole lot more complicated than they are now.
Oh, yes.
So.
Something else they talk about in the book is that all of this, why? It's not simply a theory. It's actually based on biology. And it's ingrained in us. And they have one statement in the book that absolutely cracks me up. And it says, the only difference between you and a caveman is that you can drive, is the car you drive. We all fall back on instinct. And that instinct hasn't changed all that much over millions of years of evolution. And that instinct tells you who you can trust, what you believe.
Yeah, the bottom line is people inherently want to be around people and organizations that share their beliefs. You know, being part of the crowd or whatever, being part of the cult, but everybody has their own opinion about that and is often swayed by things. And once you get a following out there because of your why, it just gets contagious. But yes, they actually do have a chapter and they're talking about, this is biology and talking about different brain things and whatever. And it's absolutely true. It's simpler than you think. Life, people are creatures of habit. And a lot of habits is just following what your beliefs are all about.
That's it. And again, we've talked a lot about the cult of Apple and the followers that Apple has. But because Apple is so specific with its why, it has a group of people who just as fervently hate them. They can't stand Apple. They want Apple to fail at every turn. Because their why is not the same as Apple's why.
Or they don't have a why to begin with.
But that's a big part of it, is that having your why helps you align with other companies, other customers, other people that share your why. And it helps you collaborate with them. It helps you trust them. It helps them trust you. But you're not going to find a why that unites everybody. There will be people who have whys that are at cross purposes to you. Part of that leads to competition, which in itself is good, because you have to work towards your why. You have to figure out, is your why really worth what you're doing?
Yeah, a lot of that is reflected in your employees. I mean, there's a quote coming out of the book that says, great companies do not hire skilled people and motivate them. They hire already motivated people and inspire them. In other words, the people that are working for Apple and Southwest are totally on board with the why of the company in the first place. And because of that, they're a lot easier to work with. They perform a lot better because it's not just a job. It's really what is coming from their heart. It's coming from their why also.
Right. And this happens at companies. Because you talk to people who all they want to do is work at Google, because Google aligns with their why. All they want to do is go to Harvard, or all they want to do is go to Yale, because that school aligns with their why. Finding those alignments helps propel you to success, but it all starts with why you're doing it. It's your mission statement. And when I say mission statement, I don't want you to think about the corporate mission statement that says, yes, we are here to serve our customers at a reasonable price. That's not a mission. your mission is your why. Why do you do what you're doing?
Yeah, your mission is actually, it's the means to accomplish your why. It's really your roadmap, the guiding principles, and how you intend to do what you want to do. It guides you right there. The vision is the why. The mission statement is kind of like the how.
Exactly. And we're coming up on the end of our time here. So, Chip, what's your big takeaway for this week?
The title of the book, Start With Why.
I think my takeaway is you really need to understand why you do what you do. If you don't understand the why, the how and the what are going to fall flat. So starting with why is incredibly important. You've been listening to the Success Showcase. You can catch us here every week at blogtalkradio.com/successshowcase. You can also find us on the iTunes Store and the Apple Podcasts app. Remember, make this your best week ever and make next week even better. See you then.